This is GamesAtWork.biz, your weekly podcast about gaming, technology, and play. Your hosts are Michael Martin, Andy Piper, and Michael Rowe. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and are not the opinions of any organization which they have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 354, How to Be the Trinity. Hello, welcome again to GamesAtWork.biz. I am one of your hosts. My name is Andy Piper. I am sitting here somewhere in the southwest corner of London in my makeshift studio. Really excited to be here this week again and talk all things tech, games, work, metaverses, etc. Probably not enough Lego for my liking. But anyway, I've got my friend Mr. Michael Rowe here as well. Michael.
Hey, Andy, happy Friday. And is it Metaverse-I or Metaverse-es?
Well, surely it's all going to be one Metaverse, interoperable Metaverse.
We could ask our friend Epred, also known as
he's
Ian
Hughes.
He's
a Metaverse evangelist.
He is a Metaverse evangelist, and he is on the show with us this week. Hey, Ian, welcome.
Hello. Good to see you all again. I know we talk often, but it's good to be on the actual podcast that I spend all my time listening to.
Well, if this is the one that you spend all your time listening to, you don't have much time.
I have it on repeat all the time.
Oh. Yeah.
And the best way to metaverse. Listen. It's Metaverse. There's only one Metaverse according to our current kind of rules of the game.
Ah, okay. I just wanted to be clear about that. And, you know.
The garden has no walls.
Well, it has walls, but you can punch through them and climb over them and put gates in them.
They're sort of, you know, lightweight, transparent, sort of, you know, movable things.
Well, it depends on the alpha channel that you put on the graphic.
Some might just be rubber that you just kind of push through and you're not really in the other place, but you're kind of expanding into that environment.
Yeah. And then snap back.
This is getting very philosophical already, and we've got some philosophy to talk about later in the show. But first of all, our first link here... is actually ideally suited to Ian because we were talking about old gamers and this is an old game. This is about a 4,000 year old game that's been discovered in Amman.
Yes.
Made obviously in stone because we didn't have VR headsets 4,000 years ago that we're aware of anyway, that we've discovered. Fossilized VR headsets. I don't think those have been uncovered yet. So,
would that be RR?
I mean,
for real reality?
Or Rocky reality.
Rocky reality. No, I saw this. My wife actually gave me this article this week saying, hey, this is interesting. And I was like, cool. What game was it? So I immediately went to the article and it said, they found a game. They don't know. And I'm like, well, that stinks.
You know, so, it's a game, but it's not Dungeons & Dragons, so we're still trying to figure out.
So I found another article about it where they're trying to go through it, and they believe it's similar to some of the games that they found in some of the graves in Ur. Again, I went, okay, what games were those? My presumption with just seeing the pictures of the board that they found is it's got to be something like Go or something like checkers or some kind of simple pieces with positioning on the board with little pieces, and all the pieces look the same. So,
I mean, it looks like sort of, I mean, depending on the way you squint, it looks like square or diamond shaped sort of areas that pieces would have been in. So similar sort of to a chess or Go board, perhaps. It's actually interesting. I've done a talk in the past about the history of gaming and play. And if you look at a lot of those earlier games from that period, they are often based around, almost all have some form of counter and often based around a grid, which is just looking at the way the human mind works and the human mind wants to organize information and then play with that information is quite fascinating. But also the evolution of some of those games from things like Go, some of the older ones, through. Chess is a relatively recent one, but when you look at it, things in a 4,000-year look back, you know, it's only a couple of thousand years old rather than 4,000 years old or whatever. I'm forgetting my facts, but
you're the specifics. Historian, Andy. Remember.
I know.
I
should remember, but I don't at the moment. But yeah, there's a lot of the games that sort of are from ancient Egypt and India that are much, much more recent than things like this. So
it reminded me of the history of, is it the Lydians? Is it Lydian gaming? Where they'd set up, they didn't have enough food way back in ancient history. They didn't have enough food. So on days when they weren't eating, they invented games and dice games and things like that to take their mind off being hungry. And so it was showing that shows this kind of fundamental need to be distracted by play in even the most serious of situations. So I was kind of reminded of all that stuff.
I thought you were going to go down the path of it reminded you of the History of World Part 1 and the giant chessboard.
Ah, true. But as Andy said, I'm an old gamer, so you know, when they suddenly started putting those extra pieces on the board and stuff like that, I thought, it's not proper gaming, is it? Stick to the basics and just have a good old couple of knuckle bones.
well, let's bring us bang up to date, right up to date. And this week, really, there was one story that we had to include on the show because it is huge, not just in scope, but in sort of financial terms and in the reshaping of the gaming industry, really. This is the story, and we have a link here from the New York Times, but it's been all over the media about Microsoft buying Activision Blizzard, which also includes King, the mobile gaming giant, as well, bringing in a huge number of titles and universes to the Xbox sort of family, and under the Game Pass umbrella in the future. What are we thinking about this one?
Well, you know, I saw this. Well, I saw it as soon as it was announced. No, I saw it as soon as I saw it on the day it was announced. The thing that amazes me is the price. And the reason is it shows the seriousness of what games have become, right? You know, early big gaming acquisitions were nowhere near this number of digits. I mean, this is nearly $70 billion U.S. dollars. That's more than some of the major tech announcements, acquisitions over the last few years, let alone when we talk about other acquisitions that Microsoft or other people have made, you know, 5, 10, 15 years ago. And it's the way I think of this, it's because gaming is more than just gaming. It's entertainment. It's social, right? It's cloud scale, right? It's all these different things that hit across the technology landscape in different ways. And if you have a serious gaming environment, platform, whatever you want to call it, you're exercising much more than the gaming aspect. And because more and more gaming is going into some kind of subscription model, you're also buying a revenue stream that is pretty consistent. I mean, when this was announced, I went back and thought for how many years I've been paying for a monthly subscription to World of Warcraft. And it's a lot of years, let me tell you.
Right.
And it's very sticky.
And Microsoft's Game Pass is really good for us gamers that like to bounce between things and try everything. And mm-hmm. The combination, particularly the ultimate stuff. So if you're running stuff on the PC, you run it on the cloud, you run it on Xbox, it's all there. And so the more that you can get at those things, you just find the thing that meets your jam that day. And you don't have to go and play the game that you paid 80 quid for because you paid 80 quid for it, so you better make sure you get your money out of it. You can actually find quirky little things and enjoy the art. As well as you said, gaming is life, isn't it?
Yeah.
One of the things that I saw yesterday was a statement that Microsoft is beating or had already beaten Netflix to the the gaming subscription service by far. You know, Netflix trying to move into that space by adding games to their offering, but Microsoft just increasing the volume of stuff they already have in there. And I think we've seen increasingly that everything is about subscriptions. You know, the unbundling, we talked about this a lot, the unbundling of cable or satellite or whatever connections to you now having to pay for each of the individual channels, essentially, and each of those is trying to compete for value. The it's an obvious route. The hardware is almost secondary. But before we leave hardware and move on to metaverses and other things, I thought we'd also hit on another link we have here, which is the Playdate. And we've got a story here about, because I don't think the handheld itself is available, or maybe it is already available, but they've got a browser-based tool now where you can create games called Playdate Pulp. So it's a browser-based editor for creating the games for the Playdate. And I think, Ian, you were saying before we started recording that you didn't get a Playdate. You tried to, but something went wrong.
Yeah, I was sort of in a hold queue and nearly at payment.
Right.
And when I did payment, it didn't like UK credit cards at the time.
Right.
They fixed it, but then by the time I got back in the queue, it all gone. And it's pity because it looks a really interesting, quirky little bit of kit, doesn't it? So
it does. It's to beautiful. Put these creation the hardware. Tools in,
yeah, I thought they've shipped a few of them finally of the
maybe
physical
ones. I'm getting confused because it's similar to the Pocket, isn't it? So, or at least because I think the Pocket is also in a bright yellow or was. I'm confused about which one's which and which
the,
one.
The
well, actually,
had
I'm not.
The Playdate.
It's the one with the crank.
Yeah.
But I don't know which.
It
says it's no. It says here
it hasn't. Okay.
Yeah, it says
maybe I've just seen people who talked about getting either early reviews or demo kits or something.
Yeah, I mean, the magazines have had them. And there's certainly people have discussed, but they're not GA yet.
But even this was shipping, you know, they invented it with a seasonal episodic gaming concept, right? So, you know, you get the hardware. It, absolutely, it is. You know, but people expect, you know, an ongoing software and entertainment service that delivers that to you through the piece of hardware you've bought. And the hardware itself is innovative and interesting. But yeah, your story about trying to queue up for getting it reminds me of my experience with the Steam Deck. That was extremely painful to even get into the line.
I didn't
for
get
that.
One of them either. I mean, ridiculous. I used to buy absolutely everything. I mean, the thing that kind of stopped it was kind of going back to the Microsoft thing is the Sony PlayStation not 5 not being available. So it's like, well, I was going to get an Xbox anyway, so I got a Series X, but I would normally buy a PlayStation to sit beside it, and I didn't. And now I was like, oh, well, I haven't bought that one, I won't buy this one. Maybe I'm just getting old. Maybe I'll go back to my board game.
There you go.
Get your rocks or your knuckle joints, knuckle bones out.
Twigs, yeah. Well, so moving along, because Playdate's kind of a mobile thing, we've got a story on Wired about Mirrorscape, which is not a company I'd heard of until this week, seeing this story, but it looks somehow yet, looking at the screenshot of the image here, they've got something that looks like it runs on a mobile phone or something, an AR platform that lets you bring your board games into AR, is that how it is?
Well, what's interesting about this, I remember us, a year or two talking about various gaming tables that would have this 3D rendering of a game environment, really targeting kind of, you know, traditional tabletop games and Dungeons and Dragons and things like that, right? And what they have done, Roll20 was the other one that did that.
Right.
What these guys have done is basically, and there's a video attached if you get a chance to watch it, is they got rid of the desk. They use the table, whatever table you have, and then each of the players have their cell phones on a little stand in front of them. And that is doing an AR experience onto the table that they're sitting around playing with. And, you know, you might have a card, right? You shine the card underneath it. It picks up the figure, and you can put it on the board, whatever. And it really looked to me to kind of take you into that next version of these types of games with the idea of a year or two from now having a mass market adoption of some kind of AR glasses. So now I won't need the game, you know, the interpreter on my phone or on my tablet, but I have my glasses, and now, and I think we talked about this before too, not only can I then play an AR game together around a table, but now I can have my table, Ian, you can have your table, and Andy, you can have your table. We can all sit at home and play virtually together through AR and experience it together on our own tables thousands of miles apart.
And that reminds me of that game, Ian, that you recommended to me for the Quest, which I have still not actually sat down and played with you, which is that board gaming one that you could play through that. It's another one of those devices where I use the app to download all the games, like the Kindle, and then I barely get to play them.
Well, yes. I mean, I saw this. Obviously, AR is, it doesn't always need the headsets, and the fact that you can just build these things and the tools are there to build them is really interesting. But I was, when I saw that, I thought, oh, one thing I did buy is a Tilt 5. So that'll arrive at some point, which is the AR headset, table, wand.
That was the one.
And so I'm going to be interested. I'll do both. I mean, why not? But I think it is nice being able to just do stuff like this on any flat surface, but it's also this gadgetry we have when we actually kind of get the thing out. And like when you get a board game out, you get the board game out. It feels more like that, I think, possibly. I don't know yet, but with the Tilt 5, it feels like an event.
It's more substantial.
Yeah.
You're going to need a cupboard just for all of the headsets, because you're going to have at least three or four different VR AR headsets at the way we're going.
Just get your magical bag of holding and put them all in there.
I wish. There's another, the Ardent Roleplays video as well of this stuff. Mm-hmm. So there's a series of these kind of things. Now, somebody that doesn't believe in VR apparently is Philip Rosedale.
Why would he?
Something we started to talk about last week, which was Philip Rosedale returning to advise, I think. Isn't he a special advisor to Linden Lab rather than actually sort of directly running it? Oh, the other thing that I saw happened today was that Roblox finally released their, and this isn't in our show notes, it just came up as I was thinking about this story. Roblox finally released the post-mortem for their outage that lasted, I think, 3 days last year. So I need to go read that. Anyway,
was it the computers went wrong or something?
Something to do with a power plug or something like that.
The flex inverter had crossed the streams and
yes, I mean so Philip not being overly hot on VR, that's not really a surprise, given that he has spent a lot of time trying to get it. I mean, High Fidelity was about VR initially before, and then they sort of went, well, that's not working. And so he's been in that space. It's not like he's some random that's come along and gone, no, that doesn't work. He's tried. And what he's saying is that you need things that are easily accessible to get mass market.
Right.
And headsets are not going to get mass market anytime soon. not least because of the parts shortage. So people can't make things. Again, going back, we just can't get a PS5. But the fact that we have, as we've seen with the desktop stuff just then, we've got these things in our hands that we can use, and extremely powerful either devices or high bandwidth connections to do cloud rendering. There's a lot more scope to get people involved in the whole metaverse thing with the screens that we've got. That doesn't mean you can't also do VR. I mean, that's or AR or both or projection. I mean, they're all endpoints for this way for us.
Well, and that's the whole idea of a true metaverse is the entry point. The end point doesn't matter. It's the end-to-end experience that I can come in any way that I am available. It could be a very low fidelity thing, right? It could be literally just audio. you know, 16-bit audio, or it could be all the way down to a highly immersive, you know, completely cave-driven VR experience, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter. It's the connectivity between all these systems and platforms to drive an experience.
And as we know, I mean, way back, the Second Life experience we all enjoyed back in 2006 when we were younger.
Yeah. Back in the day.
That we were all saying we need a mobile thing, and there were various kind of hacks and things. I remember sitting on a train with a Nokia N95 actually.
Yes.
I actually had a team develop one that allowed you to use a Palm Trio to access Active Worlds in real time.
There we are. So that makes sense, doesn't it? And all
it does.
I still get hits on that video on YouTube where people saying, "Can I get the code?"
It comes up in the end of this article on Protocol with Rosedale saying, you know, they missed mobile in 2003 when Second Life launched, but it is critical. It's about accessibility, and also mentioning things like webcam-based avatar tracking. I think we did some of that, or Ian especially did some of that in the Wimbledon setup. Again, you know, like, you know, ball tracking and reproducing that in the virtual world, a virtual environment. So, yeah. It's funny how this stuff comes around again, as usual.
I know it's not in the show notes yet, but there is the video of Decentraland having a rave. See that on the tweets? So there was nothing against Decentraland and nothing against the rave they were having, but almost all the responses were, yeah, that we've done that for years, and that looked a lot better in Second Life as well. That's not a rave. No. there was lots of... And I it's unfortunate because we're all kind of getting grumpy old people about this stuff, but I think it's nice that they're all trying again. That's why.
How dare you call me a person?
Okay. I was flattering your AI.
Talking of which, are we in fact simulations ourselves, or are we living in simulations? So we've got two really interesting pieces. Actually, I think Ian, you brought both of these to our attention. So you're the ideal person to have to talk about them.
Yes.
So we have two things, one of them being a review of Reality Plus by David J. Chalmers, and the other one being How to Be a God by Professor Bartle, Richard Bartle. Where do we go here? Are we here? What's happening? Where am I right now?
Well, it's interesting that we're at the point where, I mean, it's great to have a book by Prof. Bartle about how to be a god, where he's, as a game designer of significant note, having, and as an academic, writing about the theology and philosophy of what does it mean to run a virtual environment and have non-player characters that may be AIs in it, and what are our responsibilities, and those kind of things in a quite light-hearted way, very deep. And then at the same time, coming out about the same time, is Reality Plus, which is a philosopher talking about virtual worlds and about the fact that everything's virtual anyway. So that the key is that when you look at a virtual world and you engage with it, it's not imaginary.
No.
It's a thing that's happening. It just happens to be graphics and rendered, whereas you look out the window and it's imaginary because your brain's putting all the things together to try and understand what's going on. So that kind of gets into the, is this a simulation or not? If there's no difference, where do we go? But that's the point. That's
right. Right. I mean, yeah, actually, so the Reality Plus book isn't out yet. This is a sort of a preview review. But the other one, How to Be a God, you can, of course, purchase, but there's also freely available PDF of it, which is great. I look forward to both of these, actually. They both sound really interesting. I'm curious because the Guardian link we have here heavily references The Matrix, and presumably the book may well feature it as well. Did you go and see the Resurrections in the end, or nobody's seen it yet?
No, because of Rona. So right. avoiding that and Spider-Man. And I really do want to see it, but equally I don't. It was sort of over time. Sometimes...
You don't want to go back and ruin or change things.
You know,
what you remember,
I saw it here on HBO Max.
Speaking of streaming.
That's right.
Yeah. And I enjoyed it, but I think you're absolutely right. It was of a time. It was revolutionary when the first one came out. And they've... If I didn't know any better, this is a reboot. Right? It's not a reboot.
Right.
It's definitely not. It's part of, you know, a sequence of events that have occurred. But it's a really good reboot of the movie.
Right.
I mean...
Well, I will check it out at some point. But like Ian, and in my case already having been given the virus by Spider-Man, I'm not going back to a cinema anytime soon. So
you didn't listen to President Biden?
I did not listen. Well, President Biden only warned us last weekend.
Yes.
We don't listen to politicians anymore.
We don't. Talking of politicians.
Yes.
Moving smoothly along to our next topic. Ian, again, you pointed out that Democracy 4, the game, is now available on Steam or has been available. I think you said you had the preview release, did you?
It's gone kind of full release this month, I think. So,
right.
But it's been in early access.
Right.
And I love Democracy 3. I always used to use it in presentation. Well, I don't think I played 2, but I had 3 way, way back. And I often used to use it in presentations to say, well, there are different ways of understanding the world and playing games and engaging with data, effectively. And so 4, when it came along and I saw it on preview, it was like, yes, of course. And I keep diving in and, you know, often get assassinated or kicked out. But because it lets you, it's a political model, and that lets you or forces you to make decisions on, you know, on taxation or on environmental issues, or, and that the model is quite complicated and everything balances into one another, and you can practice being an absolute horrible
yeah.
person.
I could do this 40 years ago, 1982. I played a game called Great Britain Limited on the BBC Micro at school.
Yes.
And you could do exactly the same thing. You could just,
absolutely,
you know, right, in impose swinging taxes, cause chaos, and yeah. But you could be actually really successful in doing so.
But here's my question, because, you know, we there's a lot of games like this, simulator games, right? The most famous being SimCity, right? And various other ones. My question on these games now is, how many of them are just simulators versus ones that actually use models formed based off of real-world data that's going on right now, looking at the wealth of data available on the internet to influence and drive their models?
I think the work that Positec and Cliff puts into that, it's not a random math thing. He's been working on it. And he does other types of games as well. But and it's also only the political landscape. So the other things are always builder games, and you have an economy and you have things. This is about what happens. I mean, it only represents itself as a sort of balanced graph of things that go up and down, this big network diagram of things that are happening that attract your attention. And you kind of put pressure on one part and you see it bleed or impact across the whole kind of mesh, because life is complicated. And I think this should be in schools. I mean,
I think that is, yeah, that is an absolutely great value in simulation. I thought, Michael, you were going to go down the road of, well, what if you had an OO vest and you started to physically bleed from all of the, you know, the horrible things the politicians, what you were doing as a politician.
Yes.
That was a very surreal thing to think.
And then you'd have to stem the bleeding by climbing in the fridge, but don't climb in the fridge.
Okay. So with that slightly surreal and strange turn, we're going to end on a story that, Michael, you were particularly interested in, but yes. I find interestingly strange.
Well,
which is a story from Slash Film about, it's been in other news outlets, of course. Other listings, television listings, magazines are available. You do not have to listen to our podcast or read all the links we send you, but you should.
But you should.
This is about Daniel Radcliffe, who is going to be portraying little Harry Potter. He's going to be playing Weird Al Yankovic.
Yeah, so
this started as a joke, right? A while back, Funny or Die did a fake movie trailer for a Weird Al Yankovic biopic. And they're actually going to make it now, which I think is hilarious. And being a Weird Al fan for a long time now, I think that's great. And it seems to me that Daniel Radcliffe just keeps doing more and more bizarre, quirky roles, which, again, is great. So it just kind of comes together into something that I'm really looking forward to, and I think it'll be loads of fun. Just for the concept behind the whole thing. And I like Weird Al, so I figured I would share.
I think
we might have a couple of listeners who like Weird Al, too.
I'd actually missed that this is being...
I think it's great that he's doing it, and I think it's one of those things when you have been, especially in his case, from an early age in a long franchise, a decade playing that character, that you need to start doing some, really different things if you want.
But he has for years now. He's done all kinds of crazy stuff that are not.
You're right.
That's the point.
But what I didn't clock until we started talking about this is that actually, it's being produced by Funny or Die. So, as you say, it's right in there. I'd completely missed the background to it. I'd just read the headline and thought, and the fact that he was going to be doing it, and thought that's an interesting twist or shift. The actual background to it's even more fun.
I do appreciate he's an actor, so he's trying to find interesting things to do, and it is funny, but it does seem unfortunate because he's always going to be Harry Potter, isn't he?
Yes.
Whereas we were just talking about The Matrix with Keanu Reeves, but Keanu Reeves is John Wick. And he is Neo, and he is Bill and Ted. I can't remember which one he is. So some actors manage to maybe find. Oh no, that sounds snobbish. I was going to say more solid things, but as it's said in here.
Hey, in acting, as long as you have a next movie, that's solid.
That is the point. I mean, it's a job, and he's doing a job, and he's entertaining us. And even the picture on that thing with him with a goose or duck or whatever is just quite amusing, isn't it? So good on him.
Yep, really looking forward to it. Well, I think that's all the time we have for this week.
I think so. Thank you, Ian, for joining us. We really appreciate it. It's always fun to have you on.
And you know, I felt a little overwhelmed by having a Brit on both sides of me.
Well, yes, some balance at least.
Exactly, some proper corrective treatment, Michael.
That's right.
Rather than just my little voice occasionally telling you you're wrong.
Lego.
Well, at least it's consistent. Drop us a link over on Twitter or over on our Facebook page, or how about rate our podcast on your podcatcher of choice so that others will find out about us. We would really appreciate it.
All right. And I think Michael may be back in the weeks to come. So
who knows?
Back to full strength as hosts. But in the meantime, thanks for listening. See ya.
Bye. You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming, technology, and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.